Blog Talk Radio.
Absolute power corrupts absolutely.
Hello, everyone, and welcome once again to Sunday morning, 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you know what time it is. This is the Master Plan. My name is JT, and I'm here for the next hour to entertain you, and hopefully you enjoy what I have to say. Like I said, the number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. Jump on board or jump into the chat room if you'd like to do it that way. Ask a question, a comment, or a question in the chat room. We'll address it that way. We got a fun show in store for you today. So tune in. Listen to some Montel Jordan, and like I always say, this is how we do it. All right. Let's get down to business here. We got a few things that I want to cover this hour. Some in the world of golf, some in the world of baseball, some in the world of basketball, and some in the world of football. So we're going to cover a pretty wide gamut of things. Hopefully you get to all of them. Hopefully I don't stutter too much over my words and I get my point across to you, and let's just jump right into it. Let's just jump right into it. You know, I had said before that on a couple shows, especially in yesterday's show about Tiger Woods, and he got a bad break, took a bad drop, but he lived to play the weekend at the Masters. But he had two strokes added to the score, and he's lucky he got that. If it wasn't for a revision, in the rules of golf made about 2 years ago, he wouldn't be here right now. He'd be disqualified, sitting and watching the rest of the Masters. Let me lay this out to you. Woods was deemed to have taken an improper drop on the 15th hole during the second round of the Masters on Friday. When his approach shot hit the pin and bounced back into the water. So he made a bogey 6 foot on the hole, which was on Saturday morning was revised to triple bogey 8. Instead of a 1 under par 71, he was given a 73. He shot 70 in the third round on Saturday, and he's at 3 under for the tournament. And this is how he explained it on Twitter on Saturday morning. And this is a quote. At hole number 15, I took a drop that I thought was correct and in accordance with the rules. I was unaware at the time that I had violated any rules. I didn't know I had taken an incorrect drop prior to signing my scorecard. Subsequently, I met with the Masters Committee Saturday morning and was advised they had reviewed the incident prior to the completion of my round. Their initial determination was that there was no violation, but they had additional concerns based on my post-round interview. After discussing the situation with them this morning, I was assessed a two-shot penalty. Like I said, instead of a 71, he was given a 73. I understand, accept the penalty, and respect the committee's decision. Before last year, he would have been disqualified for signing an incorrect scorecard. Under the new rules, a player can have a penalty strokes added afterward when facts were not reasonably available or presented at the time of the scorecard signing. And this is a quote from the executive director of the U.S. Golf Association. This is a logical and important step in our reevaluation of the impact of high-definition video on the game. We collectively believe that the revised decision addressed many video-related issues never contemplated by the rules of golf. Now, Fred Ridley, he's the chairman of the Masters Competition Committee, said this in a statement Saturday morning, and this is a quote: after being prompted by a television viewer, the rules committee reviewed a video of the shot while he was playing the 18th hole. At that moment, based on the evidence, the committee determined he had complied with the rules. After he signed his scorecard, and in a television interview subsequent to the round, the player stated he played further from the point than where he had played his third shot. Such action would constitute playing from the wrong place. This quote continues: the subsequent information provided by the player's interview after he had completed play warranted further review and discussion with him this morning. Excuse me. After meeting with the player, it was determined that he had violated Rule 26 and he was assessed a two-stroke penalty. The penalty of disqualification was waived by the committee under Rule 33, as the committee had previously reviewed the information and made it its initial determination prior to the finish of the player's round. So, in essence, Rule 33 was saying, let me get this right, that they had determined that he didn't make a mistake, so if he had signed the scorecard improperly, then he would have been disqualified. But they had told him prior to him signing his card, he didn't do anything improper. So him signing the card and assuming that nothing was improper constituted that he didn't do anything wrong, because they had cleared him of any improper play. That's basically what they're saying. Tiger learned of this controversy Saturday morning when his agent notified him. And then he came in, didn't do it by phone, came in and explained what happened yesterday. This is a quote from his agent, saying he called Woods to discuss the situation, in which the golfer quickly made arrangements to get to Augusta National and discuss the violation. So he wanted to clear this up right away, because now he's saying, wait a minute, I may get disqualified here. Did I do something wrong? If I didn't know I did something wrong. He came in, he didn't do it by phone, he didn't call him, he came in and explained what happened yesterday. He was not doing any negotiating. He was coming in to explain himself. Whatever decision was going to be rendered, he was going to respectfully accept it. He abided by the rules of golf. And quite naturally, when something like this happens, especially to a known world-renowned golfer, and right now the number one golfer in the world, you're going to get a wide array of opinions on this. Nick Faldo, who's a 3-time Master champion, saying Tiger really should really sit down and think about this and what it will leave on his legacy. Personally, I think this is dreadful. That was no intention to drop close to the divot. But current players were. So see, that Nick Faldo was an old school guy, and basically was saying, I think he cheated and got away with it, Tiger, which is not right. Come on, man. Come on. Newer players were more positive. Bubba Watson And this is what I'm question I'm asking. A viewer called in, and that TV viewer can change the course of a tournament by calling with their observations. And he also said this about the TV viewer who raised the issue Friday with the Masters officials. He said he wouldn't even know who to call if he saw something like that, breaking a rule. I don't even know how these people get a number to call. That this is a quote from Watson. And this is something pretty crazy, too. It's obviously they got more time on their hands than I do because I don't know the number, and I'm playing in a golf tournament. But he said he was glad that the rule was adjusted. And this is a quote. A guy could break a rule and not know he broke the rule, like me today. There's no cameras on me today. No, everybody else could care less what I was doing. But, Watson said, TV viewers shouldn't be able to affect how players make rule decisions. I totally agree. Where did this caller, whoever this caller was, get the number and was convincingly enough, convincingly enough that the rules committee, the powers may be, took a look at this. And I totally agree with what he's saying, that TV viewers shouldn't be allowed to affect how players make rule decisions. So when somebody calls in, like, it shouldn't be that way. It shouldn't be allowed. Nobody calls in during a basketball game or a football game and said, hey, somebody, he did something wrong. You got to change that. So this boggles my mind, you know, I talked about this yesterday. This had to be somebody, and this is a conspiracy theory type of thing. This had to be somebody, in my opinion, the conversation we had yesterday. Excuse me, that somebody was involved in golf that called this in anonymously. Somebody that had the keen enough eye, because as the casual viewer, you're going to watch it. Who's going to have the nerve after watching it and they see something wrong and saying, I'm going to call that in? What? How many people do that? What kind of busybody would do that? Just arbitrarily just call and say, hey, he did something wrong, and know what number to call. That's just it. Much less if you have the nerve to get up enough nerve to make the call. What? Who are you calling? And be convincingly enough, that the person you call is going to take action on it. Who does that? Who does that? Other than someone that's involved within golf, that knows what number to call and knows who to speak to when they complete that call. I'm just saying. I mean, that doesn't absolve Tiger from what he did, but there's a bunch of factors here. Someone with the nerve to call in, and someone knowing when they make that call, who to call, and then be convincingly enough to have the person who received the call put into action the events that took place. That's I don't know. I'm just saying, you know. I got a few more quotes here. And Freddie Couples called a rule adjustment a blessing for every golf pro in the world. We all know that we'll get the same ruling if it happens to one of us. Graham McDowell, he missed the cut by one shot, but said that take the fact that with Tiger out of the equation, it's a fair ruling. Hunter Mahan, who missed the cut, also said, I like this ruling because it took an illegal drop, but no official brought it to his attention. Let me put these scenarios, because I'm reading from an article here. Let me put these scenarios. When the shot hit the flagstick and rolled back off the green and into the water, under Rule 26-1, Tiger had three options at the yellow stake. He could have played from a designated drop area, which he chose not to do because he did not like the lie. He could drop the ball, keeping the point where it last crossed the margin of the water between the hole and the spot on which the ball would be dropped. Since the ball entered the water well left of Woods' position from the fairway, Woods did not choose this option, which would have allowed him to drop on a straight line as far back as he wanted. Or he could return to the original spot from which he played and drop as nearly as possible from where he played the third shot. This is the question. The question appeared to be whether Woods dropped the ball as near as possible to the original spot. The ruling said no. After the round, Woods said, I went back to where I played it from, but I went 2 yards further back, and I tried to take 2 yards off the shot of what I felt I hit. So he moved. He sounds like he moved it up. 2 yards was not close enough. Still not convinced he will play. I'm sorry about that. And this is not the first time that he had a improper drop. From what I understand, at Abu Dhabi in the HSBC Championship, he had an issue with an improper drop, and he took a two-stroke penalty, and that caused him to miss the cut. So this is not the first time, but he asked an official or a fellow player, he asked an opinion of a fellow player, and that fellow player said Woods took a drop, agreed that Woods should take the drop. And he took the drop, but a rules official determined that it was a sandy area, meaning Woods was not entitled to a drop, and he should have played it or taken an unplayable lie, which was a one-stroke penalty. And he didn't challenge that ruling either. And he took the two-shot penalty, which added to the score, and he went from one stroke inside the cut to missing one by one stroke. So, excuse me. Wow. So we've got a little bit of history here. This is twice now. Improper drop, two-stroke penalty. One, he still stays in the tournament with the Masters. The other one, he was one stroke out and missed the cut. Hopefully this is not a trend. Hopefully, because he's Tiger Woods, he doesn't take advantage of his notoriety, and he keeps this on the up and up. But I still say I still have a beef with somebody calling in and causing all this whole ruckus. Who does that? Who was it? Is that person ever going to come to light? Is that person ever going to come and say, I'm the person that called in, a Joe Schmo type of guy? Or is it a fellow golfer or somebody closely tied to golf, the professional golf, and they called it in? Because you make the call. Three steps have to be here. Like I said before, a person has to have enough balls to call in for one. Has to get the right call to the right to the right person. All right, that's number two. along that, be able to convince the person that excuse me, what they're saying is valid. And number three, get the person who takes the call and is convinced. Now that person has to take a look at it. There's crazy factors in here. Something doesn't, to me, something does not pass the smell test here. Doesn't pass the smell test. That means I can call in if I know whatever number it is. And who knows that number? And who can, and if you don't know that number, how are you going to convince a person that you made the first call and it's a wrong number to get you the right number, to get you to the right person, to put all this in motion? If you're not involved in golf, if you're not directly somehow influential enough that when you make the right call to the right person, all this transpires. I'm just saying, it doesn't pass the smell test. All they say it was a viewer. That doesn't pass the smell test to me. I don't know what to tell you. We got a caller coming in here from Skype. Caller from Skype, welcome to the master plan. State your name and tell me what you got to say. Call from Skype. Call, are you there? Can't hear you. Can't hear you. Are you there? Thanks for the call going once. Call going twice. Call back again. Thank you. Okay. That's all I have to say about that. That may have been Vic. I'm not sure who it was. But we'll move on. Past that. We'll go, let's see, go here. All right. From what I understand, there is just a few games left in the NBA season. And just a few games left for the Los Angeles Lakers, who hold by their fingernails the number 8 seed in the Western Conference to get into the playoffs. Their next two games they play are today. They play San Antonio and the 17th, which happens to be Wednesday, if I'm not mistaken, against the Houston Rockets. They have to win those two games. They have to win those two games. I don't know how they're going to do it. I imagine San Antonio is probably going to sit some players also. But the problem is this. The Utah Jazz are right behind the Los Angeles Lakers. And they have to play the Minnesota Timberwolves and the Memphis Grizzlies. A lot different than playing the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets, especially without their number one player who's out for the season. And to tell you the truth, I don't know how he's going to ever get back, but if they had to lean on Dwight Howard, this is the time. Dwight, your buffer, Kobe Bryant, is no longer there. You're going to have to assume the leadership and scoring on this team now. I hope you're ready for it, because any kind of issues that you had with Kobe or with playing with Kobe or coexisting on the same court with Kobe, You don't have to worry about that now. You are the man on this team, and you're going to have to do it. You better get used to the role, my man, because without Kobe Bryant for the remainder of the season, whether it's two games or the first round of playoffs, you are the man to lead the Lakers now. And from what I'm gathering, Kobe just had a surgery, so it's at least six to nine months before he even attempts to come back or come back, and it's probably further than that because Kobe's 34 years old, soon to be 35, and this is Achilles. I don't know which is worse, a ACL or a Achilles tear. In my opinion, I would think you could put a brace on a knee. That tendon in the back of your foot that connects your leg to your foot, I don't know how he comes back from that. And at the level of play that Kobe wants to play, and he's an older player, I understand that he wants to come back. I understand that because he don't want to go out like that from an injury. But it's going to take a monumentous effort on a 34, soon to be 35-year-old player with a lot of wear and tear on his body, including his Achilles, to come back and play at the level that he's accustomed to playing with. So Dwight, you are going to have to carry this team. You're going to have to suck it up, buckle up, and hopefully catch a break playing the San Antonio Spurs and the Houston Rockets. Because if you lose at least one of those games, and there's a strong possibility you lose both of them, you won't make the playoffs. But one way or the other, if you don't make the playoffs this year, I can best believe that the Lakers are going to try their damnedest to keep you in L.A., especially without a Kobe-less start of next season. Then you're going to have to be the man, and they're going to have to build around you. That's all there is to it, because it's obvious this team needs a overhaul and Jim Buss has done a poor job, in my opinion, of putting this team together. Kobe, I'm not a Laker fan, but Kobe has been playing crazy minutes because of lack of depth on his team. If you take Kobe out of the equation for any period of time, quite naturally, he has to get some rest during the game. But he's been playing mad minutes, and it finally caught up, unfortunately, in this way. So, Dwight, you want to be the man? Well, you are the man now. That's why I always say this. Be careful of what you wish for, because you never know. Well, you wish Kobe Bryant was around, probably subconsciously or unsubconsciously, Dwight. You got your wish, and guess what? Mr. Bryant is not on the court, and he won't be on the court for anywhere in the foreseeable future, and including the beginning of next season. This is the middle part of April. Basketball season starts in November, so you're saying April, then May, June, July, August, September, October, November. That's 7 months. They say 6 to 9 months. So you're saying approximately the beginning of next year is when maybe the earliest Kobe Bryant may come back. What kind of situation, or where are you going to be at stand-wise when Kobe does come back? If you are still with the team, or are you going to bail out? It's your time to shine, my man. So, it's time. Okay? You're in a big time now. You're in the limelight, big time limelight now. I mean, you thought you were in the limelight, but you're really playing a little bit under Kobe's shadow. Well, guess what? He walked away, and you're out there by yourself. You're out in the sun by yourself. There's no shadow to hide under. You out there by yourself. Now see what you can do. See if you want to be the man in a big-time program. The Lakers, a storied organization with multiple championships. Well, let's see what you can do. Let's see what you can do. That's all I got to say about that. Let's move over to well, you know what? Let's move over to this. We got about 27 minutes left in the program. Number to call in is 347-637-3220. 347-637-3220. And I've talked about some golf. Oh, okay. And I was just about to... This is the master plan. Welcome to the show. Is this have to be Mr. Black?
This is your host from the Crew Show, Mr. Black. What's going on?
How you doing, my man?
I'm good, man.
A surprise visit.
I'm good, man. I heard you talk about Tiger, and I heard you talk about Kobe. I said, let me go ahead and call in and see what's going on with the mice.
Okay. Do you care to weigh on Kobe? Because that's the last thing I talked about. And Dwight Howard now having to supposedly be the man and coming out from under the shadow of Kobe because Kobe's out.
They killed Kobe the last 2 weeks. There's no way that Kobe should have been playing 45 and 46 and 47 minutes. I understand the playoff chase. I understand the Mamba, arguably a top five talent. But, man, that was too many minutes for Kobe. Way too many minutes. You think of a guy who's been in the league since he's, 17, 18 years old?
Yeah.
34,
yeah.
You're going 45 minutes, 47 minutes a night. I mean, that was crazy. They were killing Kobe. And unfortunately, he suffered a devastating Achilles injury, be out 6 to 9 months. That's tough for Kobe. That's tough for Kobe. Kobe doesn't want to come back and average 18 points coming off the bench. Kobe's a star. Kobe even told you this before the injury. Like, he wasn't going to come back and come off the bench just to average 18. He's a 25 to 27, maybe 30-point a night guy. This is going to be a very, very difficult thing for him to get through mentally. And we saw the long Facebook post that he put out yesterday about 2-3 paragraphs. He's disturbed right now. He's very disturbed. The NBA has lost a great talent. Let me just state that for right now. The NBA has lost a great talent to Kobe. I'm sure the Ravens will suffer now in the playoffs, but, man, that was a tough injury. Shame on the Lakers for playing them that long enough.
Well, I mean, I don't think they had a choice because if they didn't have Kobe in there, they wouldn't be where they're at right now with one up on the Utah Jazz and with a chance to get into the eighth seed in the playoffs. They got to play San Antonio and Houston the last two games.
Man, you got Dwight Howard, you got Paul Gasol, you got Made a World Peace, you got Steve Nash. You got to find a way to make it happen. You have to find a way to make it happen.
Yeah, man. Those players you just named don't even hold a candle. Don't even come close to Kobe Bryant. And I understand what you're saying, and you definitely had to find a way to not play him as much as you did. But I reiterate it again: if you didn't play him as much as you did up until the point that he got hurt, and even when before he got hurt, he was keeping them in that game. They wouldn't be where they're at right now because of those guys weren't capable. The other guys you're talking about were not capable of doing the things that Kobe Bryant could do to keep the team winning. And they're in a world of hurt. Even if they do make the playoffs, they're one and done. So, I mean, the future of the Lakers next year, beginning of next year, it's going to be really in question. They're going to be 1 year older. Gasol, Steve Nash, Meta World Peace are going to be all 1 year older. And it's still not a pretty quick team compared to a lot of teams in the West that are younger and quicker. I don't know when this is going to take place, but sooner or later they're going to have to do a complete overhaul and get this team a lot younger and quicker because otherwise they're on a downward spiral from the eighth seed to being out of the playoffs for years to come unless they do some quick turnaround and get some players in there that can help them win. Because Kobe Bryant, 6 to 9 months that they're projecting, that's if he has no setbacks and everything goes exactly as planned and in an ideal situation. I'd be very surprised if he comes back. I'd be extremely surprised if he comes back and doesn't have the Derrick Rose type of syndrome, not confident in his recovery of his injury and being able to play effectively. I'd be real surprised. I know Kobe is a unique talent and he's got unique determination, but I said earlier, you can't put a brace on an ankle like you can with a knee. So coming back from an ACL is a lot easier than coming back from that tendon that connects your back of your leg to your foot, Achilles. Achilles is it takes a lot of stress on the lower part of your between your foot and your leg. That tendon and they put it back together again. I mean, the mental part of thinking that thing is okay, that's a huge hurdle to overcome. Huge. I don't know what you think, but that's huge, huge to overcome. I guess it's just like a knee, but it's even worse because it's a tendon. You can't really put anything on it to besides taping it up and putting a brace on it's a lot different from a knee to the ankle.
And
to be effective.
He immediately knew once he got that injury. He said he already knew what it was.
Yeah. And Achilles. I've had tendonitis in my Achilles, and that's a killer. But to have it completely pop, I can't even think of the pain to have that happen and then come back from it, and a basketball player, that's crazy, man. Running and jumping, man, the amount of strain it puts on that Achilles, wow. I don't know.
We're down to the last two games. When is the season over?
I think it's over on Wednesday.
On Wednesday. All right.
Wednesday.
I'm gonna try to get our guys back in here Thursday. I'm gonna try to get my guy, our good friend of the show, Sekou Smith from the NBA Tank Time blog, and also Mike Wallace, former DC resident, and also a writer for the ESPN's Miami Heat Index. So I'm gonna see if we can get those guys in here, do a playoff edition. They were on this show or on the Crew Show.
Okay. No problem. That's cool. I mean, because I want to get we haven't talked to him in a while and be able to get their insight on some of these teams. I know the big thing is that the Miami Heat are invincible, but I still say they can be knocked off. Anything can happen. They've been playing.
I see if we can throw DA in for a full round tape.
Who?
DA.
Really? You got have you been keeping in touch with them or no?
Yeah, I see if we can throw DA in.
Okay. Well,
hey. He has the time. That's a Thursday night. I don't know if the first round of the playoffs start that night or not.
No, I don't think that. I don't think it starts that soon. Let me look when the playoffs start. I'm sure when it starts. The playoffs. Let's see. Playoffs start probably on a weekend because there's no game scheduled Thursday or Friday next week. So they may start on a weekend.
Let me see if I can get all those guys together. I'm gonna try to get an NBA roundtable going for the playoffs, and also talk about the impact of Kobe Bryant's absence.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. Kobe Bryant coming back. Does he come back? Let me put it that way. Does he come back? I know he'll probably attempt to come back, but modern science has been doing wonders with major injuries like Achilles and ACL. But everyone's different, and everyone's got different healing powers. And everyone's not Adrian Peterson, so you have to wait and see what's going to happen. He already had a surgery, so it's just a matter of the healing process and rehab and see how he's going to come back. I don't think he's going to come back like he was before. I really don't. And like you said, Black, I don't think he's going to be happy coming off the bench playing X amount of minutes. Versus what he's been doing for the last 16 seasons. So, but it is what it is. And since I got you on here, and since he pitched yesterday, what's up with your Nats, man?
Oh, what happened yesterday? I didn't see the Nats game yesterday. I know they're in the series with the Atlanta Braves. But what took place yesterday?
Your boy Steven Strasburg got beat yesterday.
Oh no, that's not good news.
You didn't know that?
No, I didn't know that. The only thing I was able to catch up with yesterday was Nonito Donaire and Rigondo fight last night on HBO. That was the only sports related thing I saw yesterday.
Well, I wanted to talk to you about that, but the they got beat. Let me see. Let me just look at this.
Because I know they lost the first game in the series. I believe 3-1.
Mm-hmm.
And I know it was a three-game series, and I know the game was yesterday, but I wasn't able to catch any of the highlights to understand what went on.
Yeah, they lost yesterday.
Richard Strasburg got rocked?
He gave up let me see how many hits he gave up. He gave up two runs and
that's not bad.
Let me see. Two runs and five hits.
That's not too bad.
Well, and he had seven strikeouts, but he's 1-2 right now, and his last two outings he's lost. So.
So we couldn't get two runs.
Hey, what can I tell you? Well, let me put it this way: for the longest, up until the ninth inning, it was 2-1. The Braves scored a third run in the ninth inning, and then. It was, I guess, it was lights out from there. You guys, let's see what the record is. You guys, are 7-4 compared to Atlanta, who's playing crazy now. I have the best record in baseball at 10-1.
Hmm.
Yes. So, you guys gonna have to pick it up. You've lost the last two games. and Atlanta's won 8 in a row. He tied
Atlanta's on a good streak right there.
Yeah, and you're tied.
We can't be too concerned. It's early in the season. Everybody's still feeling each other out. I think we got a shot to catch Atlanta later on down the road.
And you're tied with my Mets, 7-4.
Your Mets are far. So we're not even going to concern ourselves with the New York Mets.
No?
No.
Come on, man. You really don't think so, huh?
No, we have no belief in the New York Mets at all.
Wow. Okay. Have you played you guys yet? Let me see if we've played you yet. We have not played.
You can check it on the schedule. We'll have a friendly bet for the show.
Okay. Well, that's good because next Friday starts a 3-game series with your Washington Nats.
Oh, next Friday? Oh, perfect.
Next Friday with ace against ace, Matt Harvey against Steven Strasburg. Ooh, that is a ticket to – and it's playing in Washington? Wow, that's a ticket to have. I can guarantee you that's going to be sold out. I guarantee that's going to be sold out because Matt Harvey had a no-hitter going into the seventh inning. I think it was his last outing, and he's been pitching lights out. So him and so he's getting hyped up against Strasburg. That should be a pretty good start of a 3-game series, and it's on a Friday night. Wow. And tickets are still available for that. Tickets starting, you know, how expensive are those tickets? Because I'm looking right here, it says tickets available starting from $15. Is that right?
That's right. And tickets for $15 there. They're way out, but you'll still get a good feel from the way the field is set up. You'll still get a good
really?
Feel.
Well, let me ask you, how many times have you been to the stadium and watched the game, or have you ever been?
I have not been to the stadium yet. My apologies to Craig Stammen, Washington Nationals pitcher. He told me anytime I wanted to come down to give him a call and leave something for us, a will call, but I actually have not been to the ballpark yet, but I will get out there this season.
Well, how can you not support your team? You talk all this Nat propaganda and not go out there and spend the money to watch your team.
I am a busy man, so it's hard for me to create time for such things like that. But I will try definitely hard this season to create some time and get on out there to see my Nats.
You know, I'm one of the players I'm really impressed with, and he's in the shadow of Strasburg is your number two pitcher, Gio Gonzalez.
Yeah, Gio Gonzalez is a beast.
Yeah, I really like him. I really like Gio Gonzalez. He's a tiger. He gives no quarter, and he gets for the most part he gives you a top shelf effort every game. I think he's been out twice. He's got a 1-0 record. I think he had a no decision in the other one. Let me just look at it. Yeah, he had a no decision in the other one. But he's a top shelf pitcher, man.
Gio Gonzalez is a great young pitcher.
So you got a nice tandem there of a righty, the Steven Strasburg.
We have a nice staff. We just got to get it together. It's early in the season. Guys are not in form quite yet, but it's coming.
Well, my question is this, man. From what they did last year, is there a hangover from last year, or because of what happened last year, the expectations are so high and the pressure on these guys that they could be pressing? Or what? They're 7-4, which is not a bad record to start the season.
Yeah, it's not a bad record. David Johnson always gets off some good starts. I don't think it's a hangover from last year. There's a lot of pressure on the Nats this year. A lot of publications are picking them to go to the World Series. So there's plenty of pressure on the Washington Nationals. But as far as the season is getting underway, I just think they're starting off good, but they're not all the way there yet. They're still some kinks in the armor there that they got to work out. But once that's done, we'll see the Nationals at the top of the board. Once again, that's one of the top two or three teams in the league.
Okay. Well, all I can say is this, that they better bring their A game when they come to, when the New York comes to town. That's all I got to say. you know what? All right. Let's move from baseball because I just thought of something here, and I wanted to get your opinion on it.
Before you do that, let me give a quick shout out to Dusty Hernandez Harris and another victory last night at Dover Downs. Dusty's record moves now to 14-0. He'll have a fight May 18th in Washington, D.C. Yours truly will be in the building. We'll have the fight interviews with Dusty, with Buddy Harrison. It's a good time to be a D.C. boxing fan. So much talent in the area, so much talent out in the boxing world. We have Lamont Peterson. We have Dusty Harrison now. So keep a lookout for DMV boxing.
Well, where is this going to be at in D.C.?
This will be at UDC.
UDC. What's that?
University of District of Columbia.
Oh. They have an arena that has boxing bouts in
most,
there or what?
Most likely it'll be in the auditorium or in the gym.
Okay. What type of fight card is it? Is it Friday Saturday night fights or something like that, or what?
This is a Saturday night fight card.
Mm-hmm. Is that something that they normally have once a month or every other month or whatever? Is it a regular occurrence or something?
This is my first time hearing about an event at UDC, so I'm going to say it's the first time.
How'd you find out about it?
Oh, this is from Dusty's page.
Oh, okay. Okay. Because I had tweeted him, and he says maybe he'll catch me on next time. I saw the fight. I forget the guy's name. Freeman, I think he fought or something like that.
I believe so. I think he got a unanimous decision in the sixth rounder.
Yeah. Okay. Saturday night on in D.C. That may be easier for me than the freaking Friday night on a work week. All right. Now I wanted to go to here. I wanted to go to talk about. Get this out the way. Talk about briefly about the upcoming NBA playoffs. Okay? And see. I want this. I want to see your standings right now. That the 1-8 in the Eastern, Miami, New York, Indiana, Brooklyn, Atlanta, Chicago, Boston, and Milwaukee. So if we were to play right now and everything looked like it's going to stay in place right now, what I'm seeing here, is that the Miami Heat's going to be playing the Milwaukee Bucks. Boston is going to be playing the New York Knicks. Indiana is going to be playing Chicago. And Brooklyn's going to be playing Atlanta. Out of those matchups, who's more likely to get upset out of those matchups, Black, in your opinion?
Run them down again. You said Miami, Milwaukee.
Miami's playing Milwaukee. New York's playing Boston. Indiana is going to be playing Chicago. And Brooklyn is going to be playing Atlanta. So everyone I've named first in those matchups is the higher seed versus the lower seed. Miami's 1, Milwaukee's 8, New York's 2, Boston's 7, Indiana's 3, Chicago's 6, and Brooklyn and Atlanta are 4 and 5.
I'd probably be worried about that Indiana series, Indiana Chicago.
And your reason is?
That could be a tricky series for them to try to get through that.
Indiana, you mean?
Yeah, Indiana. That Chicago has nothing to lose in that one.
I have to agree with you. That's probably be one of the toughest series because these two teams play a pretty tough defense against each other. Indiana probably got more offensive strength than Chicago, especially if Derrick Rose doesn't come back. Those are probably two of the best defensive teams in the league. Indiana allows a little more than 90 points a game. Chicago allows a little more than 92 points a game, which is probably, in fact, it is. I'm looking right now. It's the two best points against in the league, 1 and 2. So two defensive teams. Well, Memphis is there. Memphis is best. So this is 2 and 3. So this is going to be probably a war, a physical war, that these guys are going to be playing against each other with. Not too much offense, a lot of defensive play. I have to agree with you. I think Chicago, especially if for some miracle, some crazy reason that Derrick Rose decides to come back and start his play in the playoffs, then I would have to give the edge to Chicago. Indiana, I saw them play. I'm trying to think who they were. Oh, they were playing the Brooklyn Nets the other night, and I thought that the type of play, being young, of young team, that they got some of that out of them their system last year, but from what I've seen, they still do some knucklehead things at the wrong time, late in the game, and I think.
And Grange is out for the season, isn't he?
Yes. So I still see them being a young team that still have some good pieces, but still do some dumb things in the most inopportune time, and I can see that happening against a more experienced team in Chicago. Let's go on to the other side, and depending on if the Lakers do or don't make it, really doesn't make a difference. Right now, Oklahoma City is carrying the number one seed in the Western Conference. They'll be playing the Lakers, and we'll just go with the scenario now. They're going to be playing the Lakers. San Antonio will be playing Houston. Denver will be playing Golden State. And 4-5 is L.A. Clippers against the Memphis Grizzlies. Out of the Western Conference, who has a greater chance, higher seed, lower seed of the lower seed?
That Denver Golden State series jumps out to me right off the bat. Two tough teams,
mm-hmm.
A lot of high-scoring offense there. That's going to be a tricky series to call it. I don't think I have as close as some of the experts have, but I think Golden State is capable of pulling that upset off. I also be leery of that Houston series. You said Houston was going against you?
San Antonio?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
The Spurs? Yeah, I'd be worried if I was the Spurs in that series.
Is Ginobili out for the season or no?
I'm playing some good ball. I believe Ginobili is out.
Yeah.
I believe Ginobili is out.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's key because he's a key to late game heroics. So, wow. Okay. With that being said, you got anything else that you want to say before we get out of here? Because I got about 30 seconds, and this is a good time to call it a day.
No, just a good show as usual as always. We'll see you on Thursday for the crew show.
Absolutely, my man. And let me know if you're able to. get someone, one or two or whoever you get on a show or one of the other shows, and we can deal with it from there.
No problem.
All right? And with that being said, this is the Master Plan. I am JT, and I'm the pleasure of having my co-host from the FSP Cruise Show join me here on the Master Plan. And just like on the Master Plan, this is how we do it on the FSP Cruise Show, which is 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time every Thursday night. And with that being said, we'll go out here with a little Montel Jordan, and this is how we do it. And until next week, peace and blessings, and enjoy your day.
This is how we do it. Cause I'm faded. Honey's in the streets. Say money, yo, we made it. It feels so good.